So we come to the end of questions and answers. What is virtue? In what sense is it virtue? And so on. Now, what is the defiling of it and what is the cleansing of it? Now, monks are exhorted to keep rules very intact and to keep their sila very pure. So the ideal state is that the precepts are not broken anywhere. And so they are explained here. When a man has broken the training course at the beginning or at the end, in any instance of the seventh class of offenses, his virtue is called torn, like a cloth that is cut at the edge. So his virtue should be untorn. If it is broken at the beginning or at the end, then it is called a torn sila. But when he has broken it in the middle, it is called rent, like a cloth that is rent in the middle. When he has broken it twice or thrice in succession, it is called blotched, like a cow whose body is some such color as black or red with a discrepant color appearing on the back or the belly. When he has broken it all over at intervals, it is called mottled, like a cow. Broken it all over, like a cow speckled all over with discrepant colors, spots at intervals. This in the first place is how there comes to be tornness with the breach that has gained, etc., as its cause, and so on. Now, likewise with the seven bonds of sexuality. It means seven kinds of engagement in sexuality. Some ascetic or Brahmin claims to lead the life of purity rightly, for he does not. It is a little inaccurate. I should say, some ascetics or Brahmin claiming to lead the life of purity rightly, but does not. Should go like that. Mm-hmm. So you claim to be leading a life of purity, but you do this, something like that. So, some ascetic or Brahmin claiming to lead the life of purity rightly, but does not enter into actual sexual intercourse with women, yet he agrees to massage, manipulation, bathing, and rubbing down by women. In our country, these are called minor sexuality. It is not sexual intercourse, but they pertain to sexuality, so they are called minor sexuality, these seven things. agreeing to massage and so on. A person may not break the rule which forbids sexual intercourse, if he is thinking of this, then his sila is said to be impure, not broken, but it becomes impure because he is thinking of these things, or he is taking delight in being massaged done to him and so on. So this is a kind of sexuality. So these are called minor sexualities in our country. So, if we want to keep sila pure, then we have to avoid doing these things too. And on page 53, paragraph 154. About the middle. Owing to that unvirtuousness, he is as ugly as hem cloth, contact with him is painful because those who fall in with his views, what is that? To fall in with his views. What does that mean?
Agree with him?
Influenced by him?
Agrees with him?
Maybe influence is better.
Right. The Pali word is to follow, to imitate him, to follow his conduct.
Uh-huh, imitate.
Yeah. Now, sometimes the Pali words can be misleading if you do not know the exact formation of these words. The Pali word here is dikthanugati, and it could be dikti anugati or dikta anugati, and it really is dikta anugati and not dikti anugati. But Nyanamoli took it to be Deiti Anugati. That's why you see the word view here. Deiti means wrong view, right? So to fall in with these views. Actually, the Pali word is to be separated as Deita Anugati. Deita means what is seen, and Anugati is following. So following what is seen, that means following his conduct. Is there a good word for this?
Imitate.
Imitating him brought to long-lasting suffering and the states of loss. And he is like a long, like a log from a pyre, a funeral pyre. And the reference is not 99, but 90. Although you may not be using this reference. Now, on page 54, the paragraph 155, do you understand that passage? Now, the Blessed One has shown that when the unvirtuous have their minds captured by pleasure and satisfaction in the indulgence of the five courts of sense desires, in receiving salutation, in being honored, etc., the result of that karma, directly visible in all ways, is very violent pain, with that karma as its condition, capable of producing a gush of hot blood by causing agony of heart with the mere recollection of it. I have a fresh translation of that. So, that passage must mean this. Now the Blessed One, who has directly seen the result of karma in all ways. So Buddha has seen the karma and its results in all ways. And wanting to show the very bitter pain, to be experienced by, we should go there. So who has directly seen the result of karma in all ways and wanting to show the very bitter pain to be experienced by unvirtuous persons whose minds are captured by pleasure and satisfaction mentioned above said, has said. And then, what kind of pain? Pain which is caused by pleasure and satisfaction in the indulgence of the five courts of sensual desires. So when a person indulges in these sensual desires, then there will come pain. And caused by pleasure and satisfaction in receiving salutation. That means, suppose I'm a monk and I have broken the most important rule, then I am not a monk at all. But I claim myself to be a monk, and then I receive salutation or bowing down from lay people. And so that is, as a result of that, then I may suffer in hell or in the woeful states. So pleasure and satisfaction caused by pleasure and satisfaction in receiving salutations or being honored, etc. And that pain, which is capable of producing a gush of hot blood by causing agony of heart with mere recollection of unvirtuousness. Now, suppose I am unvirtuous, then when I think of my unvirtuousness, I will have remorse and depression, and this can cause me to vomit blood. So it is capable of producing a gush of hot blood by causing agony of heart, just by mere recollection of unvirtuousness. So this kind of pain is very bitter pain, is to be experienced by those who are unvirtuous and whose minds are captured by pleasure and satisfaction mentioned above. So it's to be translated that way. Although it is also a little odd.
But it still doesn't make sense to me, the second paragraph, because it says or. What do you think, Bhikkhus, which is better, that one should sit down or lie down embracing that mass of fire burning, blazing, and glowing, or that he should sit down or lie down embracing a warrior, noble maiden, or a Brahma maiden? It's like either or. Which way? It's asking you to... I don't understand it.
That one should sit down or lie down embracing that of a mass of burning fire, burning, blazing, and glowing. Or that he should sit down or lie down embracing a warrior, noble maiden, and so on. Which is better? One sits down embracing a mass of fire burning, or one sits down embracing a warrior maiden, and so on. I think all is good here. Which is better? Sitting embracing a fire, or sitting embracing a maiden? And in paragraph 156, about four lines down, evil natured of unclean and suspect habits, secretive of his acts, who is not an ascetic and claims to be one. So that's all right, I think. Who is not an ascetic but claims to be one. Okay. And then on page 56, one word is missing. Just above the verses, paragraph 158. So the word therefore should stand at the head of the beginning of that paragraph. 158. Therefore, what pleasure has a man of broken virtue forsaking not sense pleasures which bear fruit, and so on. So the advantage of being virtuous and the disadvantage of being unvirtuous, these two are given here. And then on page 57, the first line, he is not free from any sort of terror, or it could be translated as danger, any sort of danger. And on fourth line, he is well set upon the road to hell. If we mean all woeful states by hell, then it would be all right. But here, what is meant is not hell only, but the other woeful states also. There are four woeful states. And then, further down the page, second verse from the bottom. There are no cankers here and now, Now, there are no dangers here and now, not kankas. There are no dangers here and now to plague the virtuous man at all. Okay, I think that's it. The end of first chapter. So, you have seen that mostly the monks' virtue or the precept of the monks is treated in this chapter. But some advice is applicable to the virtue of lay people and also of the nuns and so on. But many of them are only for monks. For lay person, the keeping five precepts is just enough. Because Buddha said that a person who claims himself to be a disciple of Buddha should keep his moral conduct pure, and that means he should keep five precepts. So if you take five precepts before going to practice meditation, that's all right. So for lay people, it is easier to have purification of morals, purity of morals, than monks. So monks have a disadvantage here, because monks have so many rules to keep, and then if they have broken some rules, and if they do not get rid of them, get rid of the offense, then that state can be a block to their concentration and progress. So they must do confession, or if the offenses are graver, then they must do something like living under probation for some period of time. And so that is not so easy for monks to have complete purity of morals than lay people. So for lay people, although they may have broken rules in the past, before practice of meditation, if they take precepts and mean sincerely and really try to keep them, then that's enough for them. So purity of morals for the practice of meditation is easier for lay people than for monks. Okay, any questions?
So why would anybody want to become a monk?
A monk has fewer things to worry about. Monks have more time to devote to this study and practice. That is why I said in one of the talks that those who study Visuddhimagga, those monks who studied Visuddhimagga, either give up their robes or go into the forest and practice meditation. Okay, next week we go to ascetic practices. I don't need to give you a table of contents because it's plain, the second chapter.
So we should read that chapter, 25 pages.
Yes.